this withdrawal was actually a power that was vested amongst the Lakota Nation itself. And that's why, like I said, you know, the delegation was implementing this process, the unilateral withdrawal, because we were tired of being subjugated to colonial policies and infractions. Therefore, the accountability of justice never was kept. Only the fact that you have 3/4 of our people, male and female, placed in prison camps within this country, known as, you know, America. The Lakota people have been backed in the corner for so long. From the Treaty of 1868, that's 139 years. Why shouldn't be the question? Because why has always been the answer. It's the doing that had to be done.
December 21st, 2009 marks the second anniversary of the announcement that the Lakota Nation was unilaterally withdrawing from treaties they signed with the federal government of the United States.
Gary Rowland from Wounded Knee was one of the delegates that made the trip to Washington, D.C. He said at that time, quote, "Today is a historic day and our forefathers speak through us. Our forefathers made the treaties in good faith with the sacred Chinupa and with the knowledge of the Great Spirit. They never honored the treaties, and that's the reason we are here today."
Tonight on Circle A Radio, we learn more about the secession and about what has happened in the 2 years since secession. We'll hear from Chinupa, Gluhamani, and Russell Means. Stay tuned.
We begin tonight by listening to an interview conducted in early 2008. It is hosted on the website meme.org. We are unsure who the interviewer is, but the person being interviewed is Chinupa Gluhamani, who is part of the delegation to Washington, D.C. in December 2007.
This is Chinupa Gluhamani, one of the delegates of the Lakota Freedom's delegation that traveled to Washington, D.C. on December 17th to unilaterally withdraw from the treaties. And one of the treaties that was very, you know, in a positive venue was the Treaty of 1868, but it also includes the other treaties that were illustrated, you know, amongst the First Nations people in Turtle Island. Since 1803, that's approximately 33 treaties that were more or less, you know, we were consisted of removing ourselves from it. And the fact of this withdrawal from them was the fact that the colonial government, known as the United States of America, never lived up to a majority of the provisions that was illustrated upon them. Subsequently to that, we've had numerous demonstrations pertaining to the justice system to launch any type of investigation pertaining to the Indian Reorganization Act of 1934 that actually stripped the traditional concept of the leadership process, the Council of Headsmen. In English termination, they're called the chief system. Subsequently to all these meetings that were transpired within, you know, a campaign of 33-something years led us to this withdrawal. And because of that, we couldn't get no fair shake of the justice system really investigating, you know, the graft and corruption that happened in the 9 Lakota reservations in the Western Hemisphere, such as South Dakota, North Dakota, and so forth. And this withdrawal was actually a power that was vested amongst the Lakota Nation itself. And that's why, like I said, you know, the delegation was implementing this process, the unilateral withdrawal, because we were tired of being subjugated to colonial policies and infractions. Therefore, the accountability of justice never was kept. Only the fact that you have 3/4 of our people, male and female, placed in prison camps within this country, known as, you know, America. And so the withdrawal actually gave us the ability to regain our natural practice of law, which is being free. And so we denounced that, and I'm the individual who, you know, cut his, you know, driver's license to show that, you know, I am tired of living under colonial practices. Therefore, they have never gave us any provisions that gave us the ability to travel to and from. Everything was under the State of Union, when in fact by Congress, and I think this is throughout history, within this own colonial government, that there were 17 congressmen back in the late 1800s that withdrew their seats, not to recognize some states when they become states of union. That should be, the biggest, injustice system throughout this country's colonial policy. That should be a violation itself. And so the land taking of certain treaty provision was uncalled for too. That's exemplifying the denial of how they always say that as long as the rivers flow and the grass grow, this will always be your land and your rights will be upheld according to treaty provisions. Well, that's a lie. So the withdrawal was subsequently to the reason why, we cannot get no fair shake in the justice system. With that, you have, people such as, our women and children being placed in these colonial prison camps. That's a crime against humanity itself. Basically, that's one of the implementations of why we withdrew. We were tired of being under their control. That's the best way to describe it.
Can you describe the delegation? The press release said four people represented, but you told me earlier that there were eight people, and then beyond that, there were 77 people.
Well, first of all, when we congregated with all these initiatives pertaining to the 77 amounts of people that were coming, we put on meetings pertaining to this withdrawal. And subsequently, we do know the fact that the IRA's government, and they're, they're the puppeteers of this big government, especially the little brother to the BIA, they did not like free-thinking individuals taking the responsibility for them without announcing this to them by giving them the, a heads-up notice to determine if we had a legal standing. Well, in fact, we do. We're asserting our rights and our sovereignty. That's what freedom, consists of. When we did take this initiative on with 77 people, and when it came down to the day of departing down to Washington, D.C., we ended up with only eight. And eight representatives came from some of the reservations that we consulted with throughout the past 3.5 years, which led to the withdrawal. Some were represented from the Rosebud Reservation, Standing Rock, Lower Brule, Cheyenne River, Pine Ridge. A majority of them want this, and that majority is up into the category rate of like 100-something% that want that. Pine Ridge itself, in particular, as we speak of today, has 77% of the people that want to cut up their driver's license and get away from it, because they too are tired of, the colonial practices. Now that's a high margin for one reservation itself in particular. That's who I represent, the Oglala Lakota Reservation on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, so forth. And the others, want the same thing. But for the other delegates to really determine that, that'd be up to them and their people. And illustrate the fact that this was about the people, nothing more, nothing less. And when I meant it involves the people, I was talking about the elders and the children, the mothers and fathers who are in between. So that consists, the majority of the people itself. That's what's called Lakota. From what we undertook on that day, already we had, certain, negative infractions that came from people within the system try to sabotage, our commitment and what we stood on. And those are the practices that were given to us from the Lakota people in the nation itself, with the five tri-state areas within the Midwest, such as Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Nebraska. A lot of them weren't really intensified by it. They want this. And overall, I think they were contemplating on whether or not we were really going to go ahead with this. And we did it with just eight delegates, and that's a positive. On a Richter scale from 1 to 100, we succeeded with that. And now that, it's being accepted with the growing rate of outside support and a positive support within Turtle Island, now that's the best you can give it.
This is Circle A Radio. You're listening to an interview with Shanupa Gluhamani about the secession of the Lakota Nation. The interview was conducted in 2008. Stay tuned for more.
Well, first off, I'd like to say this, and I'm going to say this in our language because it's better justified that way so the listening audience can, you know, comprehend with this, because our language is what we represent. It's the Lakota freedom. It's the nation of people. Ko mataki epi. Tona ho apeto kile wona ho kile iachuki. Lechu se chumpo. Letakule Lakota oyate kena chokata iapi kile cha. Was ake kile na lechu se umpatita. Yunka apeto ki he cha. Kushan kina jim he ha. Lila was ake kile chokata eungana kapi. Hoetaha ta komani Lakota oyake. E hani lechus e wogalakap na was ake kile un kichu ki ta komani makhoche na ta atu heno un kichop heno un kichu te kya hechu hon wogalakap na e hani hon oyate un kichop hena makhashi na kiyun kape ki ena echa wak sape ki leno lechus e patitam na ha wasloa hechus e eganakap ho wana lewi choi cha ki echa chokata iapi na ha letaku lena un kichop ni ki hena wana khab un kichu Hoyun ko oyate lina tona na unya pe ki le wak sa pe ke nisha e chanu bo ya ki le na washi chu ki wans pe ke no ki khaf ne as le na da khab le chu se un gra kam cha e ta ho oyate le na io ti e kya un pe mas ka na ha ma kho chu ki khaf he na wa man as he wa stesh ne mit ki he un cha le han pe tu ki was a ke ki le wa na ki chu ki e ta ha ta ku Hena ole on hiun piki iechito. Makhat haka echa. Waas peki lena la koto oyate uchako. Na chanupa wakha ki he akata hechun se. Oyate uchako bhe ha waaksa peki lena umpati ka. Na lechun se egana ka. Ho yunkha lena lechun se wane. Chokato unkina ji bhe ha. Oyate lena e umktu chapun koki uchne. Na wakhenza ki hena tchokata ka. Taku washte hena. Ista ole e hiun ikte ki iechito. Ho lean petu ki ake. Chante washte waakla ke na la koto gana e chela lechun se. Waksa peki le waagla ke chata ona ho o yaki peki ni shan khabi yaki ki le ta ku hena ni khof ki hena ikhpe ona ha ite o wa pi hon khlo ha pi hena yuksa po na ka khoria yuksa it khuse ka ta ku hena yachi pi ki ye chit le on peki ki chanu pa bu ha mane me che wa hina si no waagla ke la khota gana wo kla thake shi cha pe bhi cha o ho ka he I encourage other nations to rise up and do the same, because it's your people's future that we must consider in this, you know, consider this as a positive venue so our children do have a future. Because if we don't take the responsibility of what's coming, then there is no tomorrow. And so for the listening audience to really grasp at this understanding, rise up and take back, man, what is yours, and it's called freedom. Okay.
Again, this is Shanupa Gluhamani.
The withdrawal had more of a positive impact because the whole world was watching. And at the same time, the whole world was in tone to what Indian people were doing throughout, you know, the beginning of time and how they were going through, you know, the difficulties of colonial enforcement. And subsequently to that, Trail of Broken Treaties was no different than Wounded Knee in 1973 or even Alcatraz, asserting rights which were provisions, you know, under a contract. Because most people in the real world, they don't understand that treaties are contracts that were agreed upon. But the original treaty of 1868 was raped. I hate using that term, but that's just the way it is. Because back in the days, my people spoke the language to determine, you know, the fulfillment of what a life is vested upon. And language is the key consumption, how you really understand the fairness of balance in a modern concept of dealing with the English consonants in the word vocabulary, in sort of speaking. The withdrawal was more of a get away from it. then the BIA takeover, Trail of Broken Treaties, were because Congress justified its ratification because, again, you know, I don't know if most people got it in the realm. I always say this. The Treaty of 1868 was the most important treaty that most nations have a similarity of their treaty obligations and provisions to it. The Crow or one of them, I think the Navajo or one of them too, along with the seven sister bands of the Lakota, of the Great Sioux Nation. If you look at it, they're all identical, but the 68 was the one that gave us our right-of-ways to determine, you know, if we could utilize the efforts pertaining to it. Number one is Article 1. It's called the Bad Man Clause. And who we deem to be a bad man amongst the Lakota, we would turn him over to the Justice Department, the military, whoever, to carry out, you know, their, justified action. Now, in white man's point of view, it's the same thing. They had the same, you know, upbringing. If white people did the same thing within Indian country, we had the right to do that. And that's why it's known to most people in the Western Hemisphere as the Bad Man Clause. But, you know, today, people don't understand that. It's vested on rights. Now, treaties have always been practiced and perfected through colonial policies. Now, colonial policies is a positive way to look at how they were never successfully, you know, intensified to bring about positive change within the Indian reservation, which is also better known as a concentration camp. Why do you think Hitler did it to the Jewish people over in Germany? He knew, he learned that from this government's behavior. So, you know, when you look at history, the American government and in society in particular repeat history. That's an ironic thing to say, but that's the ideology of it. That's why nothing works for anybody. What have I said through numerous other radio programs that you're actually stripping the rights of your children? Now, if America can't get that, then who's going to protect these kids when the time comes, when they want to, you know, ask you as parents to buy them, we don't know if they're going to have any type of PlayStations, because the way, you know, technology grows so rapidly fast that there'll be a new game that comes out. But in sort of speaking, if the kids want that, what are you going to do, deny him the opportunity to have that? If you want to teach him something of oral history, and so he sees his friends having this new game, he's going to want that, and he's going to nag you. Now, he has a right to do that. It's up to you to give him a better understanding not to want it. Then when the time he does really want it, okay. It'll be up to him to determine if he really wants it. Just because Johnny has it, that doesn't mean he has to have it right away. There's a learning process. Well, that's what's happening out there, even through the education departments. You're stripping the livelihood of these kids, and so their rights are being violated, but yet nobody even sees that. Why do you think they just passed a congressional act called No Child Left Behind? But that's colonial. I don't know how you really want to take a look at it, but that's what I see, because I'm a free thinker. I see what's out there in the realm of life. There's something wrong out there. And we know what the problem is. It's these corporate industries. The people with the monetary existence of wealth. They're the ones that are causing all this global warming and, you know, all the, you know, negative endeavors that are happening on Mother Earth. Leave it alone. That's all it's, if it can speak, and which it does, because it transmogrifies certain, you know, health crisis out, you know, amongst the air to its big brother. And if we can't get it, I don't know what to say.
That was Shanupa Glua Mani.
I'm wondering about the timing of this event. Seems auspicious. Seems like, maybe not auspicious, but well-timed, in that the United States is the bad man right now in the world community in many, many ways. Global warming, the war in Iraq, Afghanistan, wars before that, you know, military invasions, economic colonialism, so forth and so on. Why now?
Well, let me put it in this context. Why shouldn't be the question? Because why has always been the answer. It's the doing that had to be done. People always talked about certain endeavors that were supposed to be positive to bring about change. Whether you're in an election process, you voice your issue, you voice your illustration in a positive mode. Oh, it's time for change, America. Vote for me, and man, you'll get a nice car, or you'll get the best health care system, or you'll get the best of this and the best of that. Where is it? So the timing of the withdrawal from the treaties was the positive venue. We just did it. The Lakota people have been backed in the corner for so long. From the Treaty of 1868, that's 139 years. That's a long time. But we've been trying to find positive illustrations to get the federal government to understand what he was doing. And he knows what's going on, but he likes to lie. When is America really going to understand that? His word vocabulary is about lying. That's what the political realm is vested on. If you know how to lie good, hey, you can get anything you want. But you can't be lying to a people, because eventually you're going to get bit. And when that people steps up, this is what you're going to expect. And we are tired of that. We are tired of being subjugated to that. And that's why the removal and the withdrawal from the treaties was a positive venue to bring about this change. That's the only way we're ever going to have a future for the generations yet to come.
What are the fears and the hopes of the Lakota people right now, December 25th, 2007?
First of all, one of the biggest fears that my people are starting to encounter, are we going to have to pay taxes? Are we going to have to pay for our medical benefits? Are we going to have to do all this? Well, that might be plausible, okay? But we're doing them anyway. So that should be a fear, but that's the fear of the unknown. The best way to describe it is, I shared with some young students from the Haskell Indian College down there, university I should say, in particular. They were asking me, because we got a lot of calls pertaining to how come the children were left out. The children are saying this, the children are saying that. Is it about this individual? Is it about that individual? You know, what's going on here? Well, first of all, the only thing that I could clarify to them, we're all subjugated to these colonial policies for one reason, to try to become like him, when in fact we can't. I can't change my skin white. I do have white in me. It's my bone, my teeth, and my eyeballs. And there might be other parts that are white within me. But that's it. The outer layer. I can't ever be him. I'm tired of using his language. That's an insult to my people and all indigenous nations in Turtle Island. But one of the things that is very fearsome to them is, how are we going to be compatible in the society that we're dealing with now? Well, first of all, the answer to that question is this. You're doing it already. But this time, you're not doing it for them. You're actually doing it for yourselves and saving yourselves, and you're also saving your nation. That's what's the most important benefactor to this. I said this to the college students, that, hey, take time to put the basketball down for a little bit, because that's not your culture. That's American culture. And besides, it was a white American man that created the basketball game. And who dominates that? The African race, man, dominates basketball. You know, and that's positive because, hey, yeah, people of color have always been that. I mean, look at all the wars that this country has been implemented on poor people. They've always used, you know, my people as cord talkers to determine their survival. Because I know this. I know their history. You know, my people is part of that history. And so we know the answers to how a fear-based society devours its behavior and then turns it into racism. It's out there. If you can't see it, then you're not really looking at the real picture. It's not a fearful thing to understand. Yeah, we're going to have to eventually start balancing our own. And all these things take time. Look what they did in 139 years. Woohoo! Man, come on, that's almost annihilation. But for a majority of the people that continue to keep their tradition, and that's positive. I thank my grandparents for illustrating the Lakota value system within myself. I know it's a harsher viewpoint to undertake, but if you really want it, you gotta believe. People don't believe anymore. And that's why, you know, when the animal nation starts showing signs of goodwill, take advantage of them. We got ourselves away from that. Get back to it. And that's the world over. All nations, man, throughout Western Hemisphere had that belief system within themselves. And that's their traditional practice. So it shouldn't be a fear. It shouldn't. And so, you know, that's the positive message I can give you. We still can hang on to bits and pieces of this. That's if you really choose to do that. It's up to you individually. Remember, you're still part of that nation. Nobody's going to ostracize you from it. But you are free. One of the biggest, you know, understandings that I've been getting on was that, how do we teach others? Well, first of all, it's simple. We have to teach the white man how to be free again. Because he don't know. Why do you think he's living as a capitalist? Think about that little question for once. Because that's about, you know, a controlled lifestyle. An 8-to-5 consistence of what? Unlocking the door, going out, closing it again, and locking it back up. He's still trapped in his own prison. The teepee in particular was open 24/7. It was circular. So you took it down and you moved it. Wherever the buffalo went, you followed. That's the name of the game in the Lakota people. While in white society, okay, try moving your house once. You can't. And you know, oh, you can if you have, you know, all the proper equipment and the money, the wealth. Oh, yeah, you can move it. But it's not going to be the same wherever you get it. Because there's other prisons already right there next door to you.
That was an interview conducted in early 2008 with Shanupa Gluhamani, part of the delegation to Washington, D.C. Thanks to memes.org.
You are listening to Circle A Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. And on the web at kbu.fm. Tonight we are celebrating the second anniversary of the Lakota Nation seceding from the United States.
Next up on Circle A Radio, you'll hear an excerpt from an interview with Russell Means, the chief facilitator of the Independent Republic of Lakota. The excerpt is from an interview conducted by Scott Horton on his program Anti-War Radio in December of 2008.
We quote Gandhi, in which he said, "First they ignore you, then they make fun of you, then they fight you, then you win." Now, what we're doing is completely non-threatening, and it's completely legal and lawful, backed by the Constitution of the United States and international law. But we're happy to be ignored. We're happy to be considered kooks and irrelevant. That's fine, because right now, and we have been involved for the last 12 months, in re-solidifying the foundations of our freedom. And we have volunteers, non-Indian volunteers, who have emigrated to the Republic of Lakota, working with and for us as Lakota now, because they have become citizens. And these are both black and white and Chicano people that have come to the Republic of Lakota seeking freedom. We, like on our website, we encourage and we allow these people in, to come into our country as long as they're self-sufficient, and that they understand that being free is not free, and that freedom means you are free to be responsible. And if you're a responsible person, of course, you don't make a paper entity into your economic equal, or in fact superior, like they have with corporations in America. And to allow that to happen is irresponsible. So you see, you have America that is full of irresponsible people who have allowed themselves to be enslaved. Now, the Republic of Lakota, we have a provisional government, of which I am chief facilitator. And we have other facilitators and directors and what have you that are, like I say, we're rebuilding the foundation. And once that foundation is, now, we have absolutely no anything to do with the colonial system of America put in place called tribal governments. That means, of course, the only proof we have that we represent the people. I ran for tribal president on the Pine Ridge Sioux Indian Reservation this past November. And even though it was, some say, a crooked election, I got 45% of the vote. So insofar as the largest Sioux Indian reservation with the most people in our entire country, and we're going to do this on every reservation, we're going to run a candidate for president based on freedom, and that number and that vote. So this is going to take 2 to 3 years to complete that strategy, that political strategy, and then we can present it to the world as bona fide of the people we represent. We're instituting our economic packages and our educational packages, our political packages, health also. We have 4 areas that we are instituting, because the people are not going to gravitate to you unless you can produce some tangible results of freedom. And this is exactly what we're doing. And where we are living in the area of North and South Dakota, which is the Republic of Lakota, that has been termed the Saudi Arabia of wind energy. And then that wind, and this is what the experts say, there's enough wind in the western part of North and South Dakota that can produce all the electricity the United States of America needs 24/7. That's true. That's what the experts state. Of the whole country, enough wind power just in western North and South Dakota. Now, do you think that coal companies, which subsidiaries to the oil companies, do you think that they're developing that? Hell no. They're allowing a few wind farms. Look what we're doing, you know, just like British Petroleum and their ads on TV. This is what we're doing, you know. That's all you'll get is piecemeal wind farms for show places. The coal companies and the oil companies, the energy companies, essentially, own the grids. So even if we did put up wind farms, we'd still have to give the energy over to the grid, which the coal companies own, right? So we want to do it house by house, to solidify our nation. And that technology is practically, it's very inexpensive. It's almost free. Now, back in the 50s, when I went in the ninth grade, I took economics. And the basic law I learned in that class was that those that control the energy control the economics. So look at America, if you want proof. Mm-hmm. So consequently, that's what we want to do, is each individual controls their own energy. Not only that, but on the northern plains, we have the sun shines on us over 300 days of the year. We also have our reservation and under the Black Hills geothermal water that has been totally ignored and not developed whatsoever.
You are listening to excerpts of an interview with Russell Means, Chief Facilitator of the Independent Republic of Lakota. In this next clip, Russell Means responds to a question by Scott Horton about the inclusion of Omaha, Nebraska as part of the area mapped out for inclusion in the Republic of Lakota.
Our strategy is piecemeal and individual. So if we want to promote individual liberty, you have to have individual economics. Promoting individual liberty and true individual liberty can only come through consensus. And so we have to build our nation, rebuild it just like how it was destroyed, and that is neighborhood by neighborhood. Each neighborhood, it's a mini state, and they take care of everything. When neighborhoods grow into a region and an area, all of a sudden you do not have any need for police. You don't have any need for courts, lawyers, or jails, or prisons. That's what freedom is really all about. So the people of Omaha, they can keep Omaha if that's what they wish. We don't want. We want individual liberty through individual successful economics.
This next clip is from an interview conducted by James Martinez in May of this year, in which Russell Means talks about the process of rebuilding the independent Republic of Lakota. The full interview can be found on the website republicoflakota.com.
The struggle for freedom is a very pleasurable, hard road. And it's exhilarating, in fact. But it takes time. And because we are a non-threatening, non-violent movement for freedom, it's taking much longer than people who are impatient would like to see. But we are rebuilding the foundation of our nation. And, you know, there's education, there's politics, health, and then there's economics. Those are the four areas that we are concentrating on. So we're bringing in green energy, green development. We've got a huge community a garden already started. We're planting, still planting now, and it's almost completely planted. We're bringing in a bunch of volunteers from Texas that with their machinery, and they're going to build a dormitory for our school for teachers, for experts. That'll house 8 people, and it's going to be made of compacted earth. They have the technology and the machinery that will build this, and it'll be as efficient, if not more efficient, than adobe buildings of the Southwest and Mexico. And, you know, the walls will be about a foot thick or more, and it'll be made completely just of packed earth. They found a technology that costs nothing. You just dig up some earth, and they have the machinery that will impact it into bricks, large bricks, and then with the adhesive that they have, the environmentally safe adhesive that will go with, just like in building adobe, this is what we're going to be doing this summer and finishing an eight-room green. And also, we're going to construct at least one greenhouse before winter. We are looking towards not huge wind turbines, but individual building. Each building will have its own turbine that will suffice for the wattage needed to run that specific building. And that way we get off the grid.
In this last clip, Russell Means, chief facilitator of the Independent Republic of Lakota, speaks about the four areas of focus for rebuilding the sovereign indigenous nation: health, economics, politics, and education. Next up, Russell Means provides some background on the educational system that is being implemented in the Republic of Lakota. This is from a video produced by Lance, Lucas, and Lakota Brown Eyes for Factor 11 Productions, Pine Ridge, South Dakota, 2008.
I'm a Takwapi. Hello, my relatives. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the Treaty Total Immersion School, Porcupine, Republic of Lakota, formerly known as South Dakota, North Dakota, Montana, Wyoming, and Nebraska. The Treaty Total Immersion School comes from the Maori people of New Zealand. Back in around 1980, give or take a few years, they saw that they were losing their language, so they started their total immersion schools. No English allowed. They threw out all European modality of education, because whether you know it or not, the present day worldwide educational methods began in Rome in the 3rd century AD, when the Holy Roman Catholic Church couldn't get adherence for their priesthood. So they separated for the boys, girls weren't allowed to be educated. The boys at 6 years of age, because every culture knows you separate the children from the side of their mother. They're ready for it. So they separated the boys by age in rows and brainwashed them. Consequently, the brainwashing technique was adopted by all patriarchal societies around the world because very efficient. But in total immersion education, we don't separate by age, nor do we have any bells ringing or classes. You know, that West African adage, it takes a village to educate a child. All indigenous people know that. All of us. So this is what we recreate. An educational model of our ancestors and their methodology of education. By the end of the third year of education, our children will be have introduced botany, biology, astronomy, geology, and animal sciences. And because we Lakota, see, the Maoris have the ocean. So that science, oceanography, is taught to the children. We were a horse culture. And so at our school, at my ranch, we have horses so the children can have equine education also. They're much more advanced by the time they go into their fourth year of education than their non-Indian counterparts. And it goes on from there. Now, back to the Maoris, after about 15 years or so, the New Zealand government saw what excellent citizens the total immersion schools were producing also, you know, in every instance. First of all, the total immersion schools had 100% success rate, 100%. And on top of that, every graduate, when they went into public school or the universities, were in the top 10% academically. And also, again, more and more, every one of them, girls and boys, we're good athletes. We are with the Total Immersion School. I want you to understand it. I want you to come visit us. And you'll see the wonderment of childhood. And you see, we break down the classes because when you separate people by age, they don't learn human relationship with those older or those younger. And we throw away our children to these old, archaic, patriarchal institutions of brainwashing, and we expect us, you and me, and all the rest of us to come out as whole human beings that know something about human relationships. It's absurd. It's an absurd idea that is ancient and should be discarded. Put in a museum. This once was the way we were stupid enough to educate ourselves. The Total Immersion School. The Treaty Total Immersion School. TreatySchool.com. I ask you to visit it. Thank you.
This last bit of audio we have tonight is Weekend Update Number 18, Myths and Missed Histories, recorded on June 6, 2009. Weekend Update is the weekly video blog by Russell Means.
I'm better washed today. Hello, my relatives. Today is a good day. Today I want to talk to you about a little bit about Hollywood. But it also, it's mixed in with the history of the United States. Because you see, a country founded on deceit will die by deceit. Now, why do you suppose we Indian people are out of sight, out of mind? The educational system? Well, if you look deep enough and you specialize in anthropology, and then in anthropology you have to specialize in what section we're at, and if you're going to do the Indians, what Indians and what locale and all of that nonsense. But what about the government and its policies? Why are we out of sight, out of mind? Especially when we gave the concept of zero to the world. Prior to 1492, Europe or the world didn't have any idea, an inkling in the mathematical scope of things about the concept of zero. We provided the world with 75% of what it eats. Hello? 75%? I used to claim 60%, but then I read a book done by experts, and we contributed 75%. So if we're a people that developed, you know, we're gene splicing agricultural plants, while the Europeans were still grunting around in caves, why isn't that known? Why isn't it common knowledge that the Constitution of the United States of America comes from our thought and philosophy? The concept of individual freedom through representative government came from nowhere else except North America. How come that isn't well known? Why isn't it well known that we didn't have disease? So what kind of societies from the North Pole to Terra del Fuego, why isn't those people looked at, analyzed? How did we live? What was our setup so that we didn't produce trash which foments disease? Is it because we were primitive? Well, that's why I'm a born-again primitive, by the way. Because the word primitive is taken from the word prime, a Greek word meaning the first. First people, I guess. Why hasn't anyone studied our languages except sophisticated international linguists, including Americans, that have ascertained that our languages in the Western Hemisphere are the most expressive in the world? And they become less expressive as you move west. Why isn't that known? Is it because we are matriarchal? Even the Aztecs, the Apaches, the Toltecs, the Mayans, the Incas, the Sioux Indians, the Mohawks, the Seminoles, all of the fearsome Indian tribes, we call ourselves nations, and so does the United States government, legally and lawfully according to the Constitution. But why are we diminished? Why? When we have so much to offer. By the way, did you also know that the oldest book in the world comes from us? It's called a Popobo from the Mayans. It's still in existence, still preserved. The oldest book in the world. Why hasn't the Catholic Church told you the truth about the Franciscan monks who accompanied Cortes after he ruthlessly conquered the Aztecs? Why wasn't it told that it took them 2 years to eradicate all the books out of the Aztec Empire? Is it because they didn't want any evidence? Think about that. And then why? Why is all the stereotypical images of my people and the interpretation thereof? Why? Why? I really mean it, is Hollywood perpetuating the myths, the lying myths, the falsehoods of racism, and therefore annihilation? In other words, genocide. Why? You know, my people, our men have a life expectancy of 43.9 years, the lowest in the world when you extrapolate AIDS.
And then if you include AIDS, only 8 countries, all in Africa, have a lower birth rate. Why? Well, because there is collusion in America between the government, the educational establishment, and the entertainment industry to further the concept of keeping us out of sight, out of mind, and perpetuating the lies. Look at We Shall Remain, the documentary by PBS. Another claim of another Indian series that it's told from our point of view. Well, it's another lie. Unless it's the point of view of the colonized Indian who know nothing of their culture and the structure of their culture or their history, because we aren't permitted to. It's against the law. So Hollywood takes all of those stereotypes. Hollywood, in fact, is the second most racist institution in America, second only to the United States government. And that those two institutions are responsible for the disappearance of my people. Our languages are on the cusp of extinction. And there goes our soul. There goes our spirit. You know, a black woman, and forgive me for not remembering her name, but 2 years ago, back east, eastern United States, stated, talking about her ancestors who were slaves, what the white men did to our people, she said, is he took the taste out of our mouths. Well, that's what's happening all around me, among my people. The taste is being taken out of our mouths as I speak. And we cannot find any monies to afford to teach our children their own languages. Besides that, it's against the law. No child left behind. So we can't find a private monies. You know, all the famous Rockefellers. What's those? All the foundations, they turn a deaf ear to our proposals, our grant writers. So the law makes it so. And then if we want to go private, like my school, the Treaty Total Immersion School. But just look at Hollywood. It's horrendous with the way... I know I'm an actor. Nevertheless... the stigmatization continues by Hollywood of who we are as a people. You see, it's been my privilege to act in many good movies, but only after we've struggled and battled with either the director and or the writers, and sometimes the producers, about just the dialogue. Just the dialogue. I want to change the dialogue from one of making us appear to be very dumb and dirty, and to one of me and the civilized people who care about their families as much as you do. But we're also forced to wear leather in the summer, or if we're going to do contemporary stories about American Indians, we have to be drunken, dysfunctional misfits. It's horrible trying to get the idea across to America through the entertainment industry that we are just humans. Right here in America, human beings. We're American citizens, by and large. And we have the same stories as everyone else. Coming of age stories. Successful stories, failure stories, dysfunctional stories, successful stories, all of them. We're just human beings. But we're out of sight, out of mind, and the people really don't want to take a look at us, do you? Because we remind you. Every time you see an American Indian, That American Indian reminds you of the truth. And that's what's sad. America, through its government, its entertainment industry, its educational establishment, doesn't want to face the truth. The lies and the stereotypical images that We Shall Remain on PBS just recently shown, a five-part series. The only one they couldn't lie about was Wounded Knee in 1973 because it was caught on tape. Or film in those days. It was all film, you know? So, my friends, I'll appreciate when while you're in the midst of seeking for freedom, you also seek the truth. They kind of go hand in hand, don't you think? Being free and being truthful.
Thanks for joining us tonight on Circle A Radio to observe the 2-year anniversary of the Independent Republic of Lakota. Tonight we featured interviews with Shanupa Gluhamani and Russell Means. Thanks also to Scott Horton of Anti-War Radio and James Martinez of Cash Flow Radio, whose interviews with Russell Means we excerpted for this show. For more information and to find out how you can support or even immigrate, you'll find the following websites useful. republicoflakota.com, that's LAKOTAH, Lakota. RussellMeans.com and RussellMeansFreedom.com.
Circle A Radio is broadcast each first and third Wednesday of the month on KBOO Community Radio from 6 till 7 p.m. Our shows are archived at kbu.fm/CircleA Radio. We love hearing from you. Drop us a line at CircleARadio@gmail.com. And tune in January 6th, 2010, for the next exciting episode of Circle A Radio.
Thanks for listening.